the truck transfer for Minto and Foster?
I don't think so. Chris has been handling that one right now. I know he's kind of working through the process. He was drafting a memo or an MOA?
Yeah.
Something like that? Is that
well, right? So there is a – we have an MOU or an MOA.
Yep.
So he was going to draft a letter that would notify ODFW of the Corps' intent to terminate that MOU. I think there's a 60 or 90-day –
okay.
Termination notice.
Right.
Something like that. So then that termination would then transfer ownership by default back to the Corps.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the Corps gets the title, and then we turn around and put it as government furnished property given to the contractor.
Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully it's relatively seamless for folks on the ground.
Yeah, and the only thing I wasn't sure if it does push out that timeline 90 days. I don't know, maybe Brett has some thought that, you know, if that doesn't happen soon, plus 90 days, plus the transfer work, you know, we're sort of starting with collection season for next year, for 2018. I can look, I'm pretty sure that had a 90 days sort of termination requirement or whatever. I don't remember exactly how it was worded.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll check with Chris and see where he's at with that.
Okay.
If there's, I mean, I would assume there's no hiccups on your guys' end. So if both parties are fine with shortening that 90-day period, because we all know what's going on, then maybe that's a possibility too. I don't know if we have to like wait exactly 90 days to do it, if everyone's on board. But yeah, I'll check with Chris and see where he's at.
Okay.
Cool. All right, moving on to updates. Greg, did you happen to join us?
Yeah, I think he's out.
Okay. Did you have any updates for him?
So, collection, I was going to pull up the collection report for Minto. So for the Minto for the month of November, 14 summer steelhead were collected, and 33 coho. So a relatively slow month at Minto. Everything at the hatchery is going pretty well. Eggs are in the incubators. Fish health, nothing really to report there. As we were kind of talking before the call, I think really the hot issue on the North Sandy has been the spill. What I know at this point is the highway is technically closed. We were afraid that was going to isolate some employees and traffic between Minto and Marion Forks.
Right.
We talked to ODOT on Monday, and at that point they were willing to grant access through the spill area for residents. So.
Cool.
No through traffic, but they were going to let us get through. The other concern that I had with the snow, I don't know what they got for snow last night, but the snow for this week was supposed to be significant.
Yeah.
So we confirmed with them that they do plan to maintain that stretch of road.
Cool.
Even through the closure period.
Still plow it.
At this point, no impact to operations other than the closure to either facility, the Door Marion Forks. We've kind of flexed some staffing a little bit and had some of the hatchery Marion Forks guys worked out of Minto with that closure. I think at this point, as far as I know, it's unclear how much of that fuel entered the river, but Cam mentioned there was some fish mortality downstream. So do you know any more on that, Andy?
I don't know. I got the initial alert from Dave Crocker. He gave us a call when it happened, but I haven't seen any follow-up yet.
Okay.
It sounds like the Corps is going to do some kind of after-action report. And, of course, this brought up the big issue of spill response plans and does everyone have those and what does Minto's look like and what does Marion Forks look like and making sure all those are up to date. So I'm sure there'll be more follow-up here in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
One other thing on Marion Forks, I've met with the surrogate team and Chris up at the hatchery. Recall that we chatted about affording the surrogate team an opportunity to use one of the hatchery ponds for a set of experiments over a long time period, a year.
Right.
And we brought on Ryan Cope, who's our new hatchery manager for the research hatchery, and he's also an expert on pit tag antenna arrays. Mm. So he's
cool.
Going to test, set up a test array to see whether they can put up an annular arena for migration of Chinook salmon in one of the circular ponds. It looks all possible. The pond's available. There's no conflict with fish production. That's just an update. He thinks it can work, but he's got some serious worries about the presence of lots of metal. I didn't realize with pit tag arrays there's a very significant effect of metal near the antenna that affects its sensitivity. But he's going to test it. It should go forward by March this year, this coming year, and should be an interesting study. The intent is to take a number of the different metrics that Karen Cogliotti and her team have associated with downstream migration, like egg size, orientation in the water column, and pit tag those fish, essentially put them in this migration arena, and over the course of the year track their behavior and see whether that actual downstream migrant behavior is associated with any of the parameters that they're interested in seeing, if they're predictive for especially fall migrating versus spring migrating fish. I don't know.
Cool. Are they going to structure the flow in the raceway or the pond differently, or?
So they'll set up a donut plastic to make a path around the outside about between 3 and 4 feet wide.
Yeah.
And then the antenna arrays will be arranged in that in series, at least two, perhaps more, and then they'll carefully adjust the direction and velocity over time and maintain a circular motion at all times for a year, and then just track behavior of a fairly large number of tag fish. So it looks like an interesting
cool.
idea. I just don't know how exactly it'll work, because fish are always moving in a pond. They're always moving. So how do you pick apart sort of Brownian motion of a bunch of fish that are in a pond? Ignore that, but associate with direct movement. I know it can be done. It was done in a set of experiments up in a short-term set of experiments up in Montlake, but for a year-long study to try to track behavioral differences at different life history stages based on characteristics of the fish at or very soon after hatching on is challenging.
Yeah.
It's a neat idea, and Karen's all set up for it.
Cool. All right, anything else for Marion Forks or Minto? All right, we'll move on to Salsanium and Foster. Brett, I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Yeah, pretty slow month for us to trap as well. Only 9 summers trapped in November, and nothing since probably, I think, mid-November or so. We're sweeping the trap. We check it daily, of course, but we... been sweeping it a couple times a week, and nothing keeps coming up empty. We have started spawning summer steelhead adults. We've got 2 spawns completed so far. We've spawned a total of about 160 pairs to date. Looks like there's some IHN again. So far on the first take, I think we're up to about 20%. So thankfully, we went over to Skamania Hatchery and spawned with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife staff there, and we took good enough pairs to hopefully get about 250,000 eyed eggs from them, so that should kind of help us out to ensure that we get our production goals met, because we have such a pretty low number of adults this year. We took everything, you know, with the low steelhead counts over Willamette Falls, we ended up taking everything, as everybody all knows, from our facility in the north and also the Clackamas, and some help from the McKinsey system as well. So anyway, that's on the adult side of things. As far as hatchery production goes, we've We had released our fall release in November. We got some another 300,000 or 200,000, excuse me, from Willamette for part of our spring production release. Their spring Chinook, and they're looking great. The summer steelhead juveniles are looking good and are on track to make size. And other than that, everything else is going real well here at the hatchery, fish health wise, and as far as making production goals.
Brett, any good idea on fin clip quality of the fish you just received? Have you had a chance to look at them from the rest of the issue that's been coming up periodically?
We haven't looked at them yet. We'll do a quality check before we release. When we do length frequencies. But the ones that went out of here, the ones in November look good. Or within the allowable, you know, limit. You know, they look really good actually.
Hey Brett, I know you've been making maybe some attempts to spawn those summer steelhead a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
With going back to Skamania and looking at kind of that maybe more pure stock, did you see any differences there between like when your fish were starting to get ripe at Salsanium and when those fish were ripe at Skamania?
Yeah, they spawn before we do, so that's why we've kind of, when we did this a couple years ago, we kind of have to make sure we go over, if we're going to do that, we go over and get their eggs, because sometimes they're done before we even start. So, but actually, the last couple years, we've almost caught up to them. Hmm. So we're getting close. We're only a couple weeks away now.
Okay.
So.
Cool.
Now this year, it's a little different just because we have a smaller number of brood to kind of choose from, and we weren't able to use all our stock, you know, all our, I guess, fish that originated from this facility, you know, because like I said, we had to go to a couple other, you know, kind of sub basins to get them. But
cool, thanks.
Yeah, no, we're gaining on them, but yeah, they definitely do spawn earlier there, for sure.
Brett, will you have to spawn remaining brood you have on hand late just because you have them?
Yeah, that's all we have. Yep, that's all we have to go with. So getting that 250,000 eggs will really help. It'll prevent us from having to spawn every single fish, I'm sure. But I'm sure we've got, we're going to spawn again on the 26th, and that'll be our third spawn. So we'll probably have at least two more spawns after that, maybe three. So it's going to be into, you know, definitely probably almost to February this year, unfortunately. But our plan is to keep the Skamania eggs for our production, and then that way we can still, you know, kind of keep those early spawning fish as brood, and then we'll ship out, you know, the eggs that we take for the other allocations. Luke?
Yeah, still here. Just making some notes.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. And now, did I get cut off or something?
No. Great. Thanks, Brett.
Hey, no problem.
Is Kurt on the line?
I don't really have an update.
Maybe not.
No fish collection since the last meeting. Their traps have been closed. The only other thing I'll mention is the chiller, which was purchased, I think installed in 2016. They did operate it last year, but then this is the first full year they used it for Overlook Mark, and Kurt said it's working great. They're able to use the chiller at Overlook Mark, where Marion Forks, for example, heats water to Overlook Mark. So Overlook Mark and just wrapped up last week. Everything worked excellent.
Sweet.
Huge improvement from the old system. And I suspect quite a bit more efficient as well.
Along those lines, that has to be in your back pocket, that the OLAs can be collected but need to be processed, that can accomplish the HRME subcontract in the past that was gone away. So looking ahead, I guess that's going to have to be on the hatchery to over the course of some of the contracts to get that done.
Right.
Otherwise, we'll never know.
Cam, this is Kelly. I'm having a really hard time hearing you.
Sorry, I'm usually not quiet at all. I'm moving around closer to the microphone.
Thank you.
It's just my concern is that there's nothing in place to facilitate the processing of odorless collected. So the effort that's going in to odorless marking these fish has got to be coupled with something in place to say once we get odorless back, we can pay to figure out whether that is a hatchery or a wild fish. That's all.
Yeah, good point.
Any thoughts on that, Andy?
I just think it's terribly disappointing that we don't have that contract in place.
Yeah.
And that we're going to have these holes and gaps in our data set and potentially be missing things. So I think most of you guys know. I tried to do what I could to have some continuity there, but unfortunately the chips fell where they did. So we do have money in FY18 to put towards R&E efforts in the Willamette, and I'm trying to make sure that they stay in place. I think I told you before at last month's meeting or in the meeting previous, Tammy Mackey's budget, so my boss's budget, is short. So when folks within the Corps make priorities with what to do with funding, I'm trying to be the squeaky wheel that R&E is one of those highest priorities. And also, I'm trying to make sure that there's an effort to coordinate regionally with fish managers so that they can weigh in on how those priorities fall, whether that money goes towards the production of fish or research or counting or facility improvements or maintenance, things like that. So trying to make sure everyone's in the loop. There's no surprises, so.
Your point of contact for getting access to the otoliths we have collected is gonna be the Fish Life History Analysis Project. That's run now by Shannon Richardson. They're being archived as they have in the past. And for now, we're keeping them all on alcohol. Just because that's the way to store them for the otolith mark read. Somebody has to remember after that happens, if and when it happens, they have to be drained of alcohol. I know this is in the weeds, but it was important to the otolith work group. Alcohol leaches important information from the otoliths if anybody in the future wants to do otolith microchemistry or microstructure. So they have to, there's steps in the middle that have to happen. Folks are aware of it. If there becomes a contract in place, then they'll take care of it. Otherwise, they're just sitting in a closet over there, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And where do those start and stop for right now, those otoliths that are collected, Cam? What years are they from?
They started in the year 2000,
okay,
and they've gone continuously through 2017 this past year.
But we've read some of those, right?
Read everything up through 2016.
Up to 2016, okay. Cool, thanks. Anything else on McKinsey?
No.
All right. Chad, Cougar Trap?
Not a lot to report on. Facility's closed for the winter, obviously.
Yep.
Big push up there is to try to get Unit 2 back online. It's been down for like a year or so.
Right.
The bearing cooler. I guess they're having issues that the units spin at a pretty high RPM, so the centrifugal force is throwing the oil away from the bearings, and so it's, I think, overheating. So they got to design some kind of baffle system to, I guess, kind of keep that oil near the bearing. So I heard February was the next possible operational window. So fingers crossed we'll have both units running here soon. That's pretty much all I have for Cougar.
Great. Thank you. And then Doug?
Well, Fall Creek is in construction, the new facility. We're hoping to be online this spring of 2018. Currently, most of the ladder has been constructed. They're working on the weirs inside, working at the base, the old facility, and upgrading those pools, getting weirs fitted in there, and all the associated gates for water transfer. Water supplies moving along for the facility. Manifolds going in place up at the head box at the processing facility. The structure of the processing facility is in place, about to get the roof on, doing a lot of electronic work there, grading the grounds. We had to know it down yesterday, the engineer, fish engineer, to inspect what's been built so far. Braille's in its pit in the pre-sort pool. We did have to send the braille back for fish health reasons. There were some sharp edges, which we got the contractor, the fabricator, to fix. We should be getting the crowder in place and just moving along quite nicely. And that's about all I have to say.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
Camera is supposedly out. If you want to get online and look at it, but it's supposed to be replaced or online soon. That's all I have.
Sounds good. All right, moving along to Willamette and Dexter. Dan, did you happen to join us?
I believe he's in a training today.
Okay.
Dexter is closed. Dexter truck's closed. I can't think of any good updates for Willamette. Things are going pretty well there.
Okay.
There is stuff in the future there. The Corps has indicated that they have an interest in funding Oregon State University to continue to do some pre-spawning mortality research. I pushed hard to include Fall Creek in that, continue to try to understand what's going on with that system. And I think there's enthusiasm for work in the North Fork, Middle Fork, and maybe even Hills Creek. That will require access to fish over the course of the run, the same kind of issues that we've had before working with Dan, getting the trap typically opened a little earlier than normal. The 18th of May, I think, is an early start for him, just right after they get the ponds clean.
Right.
I have in the past tried to coordinate all that on phone and meetings, but I can't. So that has to be on somebody's radar to work with Dan and Mike Kent and Jim Peterson and that crowd. Proposal's been submitted and it's under consideration.
So Kelly, this is Ryan. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Dave Jepson is going to be the RM&E lead moving forward. Is that right for ODFW?
Right, that's correct. And then I would be the backup.
Okay. So then do you suspect Dave then would be the person to coordinate the type of work that Cam was just talking about, the pre-spawn mortality, coordinate with Dan and myself?
Let me ask Dave about that. I don't know if he's going to be able to take that on. And Cam, maybe you would have a better sense of if that would be best coordinated through Dave or not. I'll check with Dave.
Okay.
So I guess, Cam, do we have a sense of the likelihood of that work moving forward for 2018? Okay.
Dude, I'm the last person to ask. The proposal's in, the PIs are interested in doing it, and the Corps is continuing to read what we say, so.
Step one or two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the RM&E group is working on prioritizing that, I would assume?
Yeah, we've presented at the last two RM&E meetings and that's two of the last three, something like that.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Cool. Okay.
My last chance, so let me just get that in. One of the things that I inserted into this new round of the pre-spawning mortality study in the North Fork is to revisit the idea that we have a limit of about 60 or 70 fish to be loaded into a transport truck based on IHOT standards. All of the hatchery managers, all of them have indicated that they've had great success loading much higher numbers of fish for short trips with good survival of those fish. So yeah, we want to follow IHOT standards as possible, but if We want to be planning for success. We'd be planning for there being thousands of fish coming back to these facilities sometime in the next 10 years. And we got to figure a way to move 10,000 fish when right now we think we've got a good handle on moving one. Okay, we're really good at moving 1,000 fish or 300 fish or
right.
You know, even 2,000 in the middle for it. But when we go an order of magnitude higher than that, things change. That's more trucks or more fish per load or a super whoosh or something like that. Keep that in mind. I think in particular circumstances where we can sort through fish and high grade them, that we could load what Dan thinks is a maximum load for his trucks, like well over twice as many as what the IHOT standards are. That halves the effort to be able to put twice as much fish in the truck. That's one half the effort. So there's a benefit to it, but we have to demonstrate that it is not detrimental to the well-being of the fish, because we would be definitely diverging from IHOT standards, which is sort of kind of the Bible. Yes?
Cameron, would we have reduced holding times for the fish at the trap as well, or would they be in there for a couple weeks where they were, you know, processed?
At what trap?
At any trap.
Oh, I don't like fish in the holding, in the pre-sort pools for long periods of time, but the existing short-term and long-term holding ponds at Sandy M and at Minto have been instrumental in doing laid out plants.
But like a Dexter, what would your max be?
A week.
A week?
You've got to get those fish. They beat the living snot out of themselves in the existing facility. So, yeah, you want them. Okay. That is all.
Cool. All right. Lieberg is up next. Ryan, you got any update there? Kind of status quo?
What's that?
Kind of status quwo.
Status quo. Coho on site through middle of March or so, and still moving some trout out. So, yeah, other than that, status quo.
All right.
No additional information on how the access to the Lieberg hatchery grounds will affect operation of the Lieberg trap and video monitoring system. To this date, as far as I know, we haven't got any real progress in understanding how or who will operate Lieberg and the Lieberg trap in the coming year. Lieberg trap or video, not just the trap, of course.
Right. Okay. And then, Cam, did you have any other updates for Bennett Dams?
Lower Bennett is, as normally scheduled, it's been tucked away and made safe. For high flow events. Upper Bennett is still operating, but will be put on kind of a soft mothball hold mode well within a week. I completed a proposal yesterday and gave it to Chris Caudill and Matt Kiefer to try and integrate Bennett operations into an existing research study that U of I has going in the North Sandy Am to see if the Corps has an interest in either operating Bennett's from May through the Chinook run or operating both Bennett's starting as early as January 1 so that we don't lose our winter steelhead counts entering the upper basin. Chris, in his conversations with the Corps, I haven't had conversations with anybody in the Corps about it, said that it seemed to him that they had an interest in finding a way to make it keep it online for the next year. The packet I put together has the proposal, and then because Fred and I, we put together a lot of CSESU subcontracts to stay alive this past year, I went ahead and formatted it as a CESU proposal with all of the supporting documents that are necessary to get it through Virginia, which are it's an onerous task. So I can't say it's turnkey, but it's close to a turnkey if the court indicates that they are willing to fund it either beginning January 1 or I believe it's May 1, might be May 31. We can pull that trigger. Alternatively, it's gone.
And right.
There is, I don't see anything really in place that makes me very comfortable that the facilities will be visited very routinely to be looking for any blockages. I mean, one log and no fish are passing. And so that has to happen.
Right.
But cautious optimism, there we may be able to continue it with some creative Corps-based funding. It's a strange situation where the Corps will fund a research project with a university, which will then subcontract out all of the work that happens here, and then we work back through that. It's a little weird, but it kept us alive for a year, so I can't complain. I ate.
Well, hopefully we can keep that up and running. I know Jake McDonald has been working with Rich Pyskowski.
Rich and and Caudill.
Right. Cool.
Would we try to keep Bart there, in his knowledge, if possible, running him?
Bart is essential. So
yeah,
he takes a different position in the middle of January if we don't get a solid indication that the Corps will fund his presence at the Bennett Dam soon, then he'll be gone. But our human resource rules indicate that I am not an HR person, but it looks like if the position opens up later, then we can, I think we're even required to offer it back to Bart again. But whether he has the inclination to do so, I don't know. If it's not Bart, I have all of the records on what dials to turn and valves to open and switches to switch, and I'll sell those to the highest bidder. no fish are moving to speak of. I mean, nothing.
Really. Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
Some like Lambert.
Okay. Thank you, Cam. Anything else you have?
Nothing real.
Okay. All right. That brings us to the end of the updates then. The other agenda item I had on here was for future large infrastructure improvements. It's something that we've tossed around a little bit in this group, and I've talked about with various folks over the past year. So I was up in Marion Forks a week or two ago, and I was just looking at some of the valves up there with Chris and continuing to deteriorate and what it would take to replace some of those valves and the associated piping, and there aren't good shutoffs to isolate components in different raceways and ponds individually, so it's almost an all-or-nothing effort in some areas. And it just brought up the fact that a lot of these hatcheries are circa 1950, 1960. They're all reaching kind of this critical point where there's some pretty major infrastructure that needs to be replaced. You can only patch things so many times, so large pumps, large numbers of raceways or roofs in some cases. So what I'd like to do is get a list from Marion Forks, South Sandyam, McKenzie, and Willamette. I guess Minto and Foster would kind of remain off that list right now since the Corps is taking the primary responsibility for maintenance there.
Sure.
But I think Dexter would be included under Willamette as far as major priorities there, just because we have less of an idea of what's going on and it's kind of the same vintage. So maybe like a top five of the bigger maintenance items.
Top five.
That we need to address.
Five facilities or top five?
So each facility would have a list of five high priority items. And I know we've compiled some of these lists in the past. I took a quick look at the annual reports from the past couple years because I thought we had included that in some cases, but it's more of a list of maintenance projects that have been completed.
Okay.
Not necessarily they need to be done. And Chris Walker had a list at some point in an Excel spreadsheet that was kind of looking at some of these things, but that would need to be updated regardless. So
okay.
We might as well start from now. But what I would like to do is be able to, when we look at budget proposals for future years, is say, okay, we're going to propose in 2023, we're going to replace the water supply system at Marion Forks. And in 2024, we're going to replace roofs at McKenzie. In 2025, you know, something at Willamette.
Something on broodstock holding pond. And I sure as hell hope it happens before 2025.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's probably the highest priority out of anything that I know of off the top of my head.
If I had to vote, Brian, I would put that very near the top tier.
Yeah, and as I recall, Lance is on the call, but when the Marion Forks water treatment system came up 6 months ago or whatever, mm-hmm. Lance was certainly adamant that we put a higher prioritization on the Willamette brood pond, holding pond, than the water treatment system.
Right.
So yeah, I agree with you, Cameron.
Yeah, for sure.
So it would be helpful if I drafted that list, Andy, for the four hatcheries plus Dexter.
If you don't mind, I mean, we can work directly with the hatchery managers. And
I've got a pretty good list.
Cool.
And then the only thing probably I'll do is take the list and have our engineer folks take a quick look at it to see if there's something that, because we've done, and you guys have done some of the inspections and reports, right. And I think maybe our folks have, although maybe we've only done that for state-owned facilities, but our engineers may see something that we missed.
Sure.
Same on your end, there may be something that is less glaring from an operational standpoint than might
sure.
be more or environmental or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the other thing that we need to consider with these larger improvements is that some of these may take more than a year to complete, or we'll have to complete them in stages, given that they're operating facilities and we can't just cease operations for 2 years very conveniently. And I'm sure Chad and Doug are well acquainted with what it takes to operate a facility undergoing construction. But I think it'd be helpful as we kind of get close to whatever these priority improvements would be, like we've done with the Willamette Broodstock Pond, is kind of dust off those plans, look at what it would take with some of the engineering folks as far as like, do we need to put in a contract, you know, with an outside construction contractor, and how many years is this going to take? We need to take multiple steps, things like this. But it's just something that I know needs to be done. I'd like to start kind of planning way far out as much as we can, 5-10 years. And start lining up the funding. And it's not guaranteed, but I'd like to make a big of a plea for it as I can.
Yeah, that's going to be a big list.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, the Corps has been more reactive than proactive.
Right.
If we can tweak that in the hatchery world little bit,
yep,
more exactly. For it.
Yeah, and some of the things, I mean, some of them are, well, I think they're all real issues. Roofs, while those don't impact, you know, production per se, if you don't address a roof replacement at the end of its life, then it turns into obviously
right.
rot and other things that mm-hmm. $100,000 projects now $250,000 project or whatever. So,
precisely.
But then projects like the pond valves at Marion Forks, I mean, that will at some point turn into a production issue to where we can't turn the water on
right.
or off to that pond or that bank of ponds.
Yeah, I was there when that happened.
Yep.
That mm-hmm. sucked.
Yep, exactly.
We looked at it really hard trying to think, okay, what the hell could you do?
Yeah.
Because there's no way to isolate it.
Yep. So that was kind of what I mentioned,
right.
Andy, is the first thing, you know, is phase one, you might just put isolation valves on every bank.
Right.
And then we'll start addressing the pond valves. Something like that. But,
Yeah, not an easy approach, no matter how you spin it.
Right.
Or not an easy solution, I should say.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I can put that together and then either send it to you. Do you want to send it out ahead of the next meeting or bring it, just discuss it at the next meeting?
Yeah, maybe let's just plan to discuss it at the next meeting, if that works for you.
That works for me.
Cool.
So then along those lines, maybe one step removed, maybe is kind of in the hatchery housing.
Right.
Not included in the contracts. I think we have a lease. I think I brought up to you and Chris the specific example of not aligned value of Coal Rivers. Do we want to go through the same exercise with the houses? I know at one point the Corps was talking about transfer of ownership of the houses. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. We've talked about that a little bit internally. I think the Corps still have the mindset of trying to transfer ownership of those houses. That doesn't really fix the problem. It doesn't really matter who owns them. They still need some maintenance.
Yeah.
And I know the state's budget is
right.
just as tight as yeah. ours in a lot of cases. So
I won't speak for our division folks and engineering folks, but they're depending on the issue, there could be reluctance to accept ownership of a
right.
property that has $100,000 worth of deferred maintenance. So
sure.
I'd hate to see us get to that point, right?
Yeah.
But I get where the Corps coming from. But there could be some challenges for us too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a couple different angles on it. If those houses are the only houses that are available in that area, like let's say Marion Forks or something, it's like you're way out there. And the state owns the houses, that creates a really convenient sole source argument
right.
for the Corps. So it's like, well, there's no other available option. The state owns the houses, those are the only houses you can use. Makes it really easy to make that sole source argument. So in some cases, it's kind of a benefit, but also I can see it from the side of the state where you don't want to accept a bunch of crappy houses that are falling apart.
Right.
And if the only reason that people are occupying those houses is for the operation of a hatchery that's 100% funded by the Corps, then it would only make sense to me that the Corps would then be responsible for updating those houses.
Right.
So transferring ownership doesn't necessarily get the Corps out of doing any maintenance at the houses.
Right.
From my perspective. But I know other folks have looked at it differently, like, okay, let's just transfer ownership and then those problems aren't our problems. I don't think
probably
it's quite
the,
that simple.
Yeah, maybe, and at least from my perspective, not the Corps' problem from the Dave Crockers of the world, the environmental health and safety
right.
standpoint, but
yeah.
from a funding, who's going to do this, fix this, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, if the Corps transferred ownership and then in the operating contract budget had a line for deferred housing maintenance, and we simply contracted to do those repairs and or maintenance. I think that makes sense. I mean, I think we would operate under those terms.
Right.
But then with the Corps speculating, but then with the Corps be willing to pay to maintain a structure they don't own.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know the answer.
No. So, anyways, I don't really have any answers for you on that one.
Okay. So, I guess the short answer then. So, would it be worth our time and effort to list those needs for the houses at this point, or do we want to kick that down the road?
Maybe let's hold off on that one for
okay.
now.
Sounds good. And then I'm fine with that, with the caveat that with the issues that came up, like the roof at Coal Rivers.
Right.
That will need to be addressed. Sooner than later.
Sooner rather than later.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That is a real issue that doing nothing isn't an option.
Yeah.
And how, I think we're open to how that's resolved, but I think it's just somewhat unclear what that path of resolution is with the lease ownership situation that we're in now.
Yeah. So
if you guys can follow up on that, I would appreciate it.
I will.
Okay.
Yeah. Chris and I have been talking about that one a little bit and trying to figure out what to do.
Okay.
But I'll get back with you on that one.
Thanks.
Okay, that's all I had on the agenda. Anybody else here in the room have anything?
A little transition stuff. Work in 2017 was successful. Nobody died. We've got a report. I finished drafting an information report, so because we don't have a contract, can't go to the Corps, but it'll go through our system as an information report. It'll be very similar to the past. It should take about 3 months or so for it to get through the review process. It's in everybody. All my co-authors now have it. Gave it to them yesterday for their review. I'll put together whatever comments they've got, submit it for review internally, and then it'll just get published. So have all of the information that we've already been sharing over a decade, just in a yellow covered booklet instead of a core document. I am waiting for scale data because we've got FLAP to read our scales, and those have to go into the report. They say they'll have them before New Year's. So if I get that, then it'll actually be a data set that I can update. What I've already shared with you guys, the same spreadsheet with all the tabs in it. A lot of that needs to have H data built into it. So I'm hopeful that there'll be enough freeboard in any position to work a little bit on getting that completed, and I'll pass it on as it becomes useful.
Is that sold for 2017?
This year's.
Yeah, Robert. So almost real time.
Quick turnaround.
Fewer things to worry about because I don't have to wait 3 months for Odalith data.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, otherwise, so long. Thanks for all the fish.
Thank you, Cam. Sad to see you go.
For sure. Question. Is that all you had, Cam?
That's it.
Okay. Summer Steelhead, HGMP, I guess, yeah. HGMP and then Summer Steel litigation. I know you may or may not be able to talk a lot about the litigation stuff, but any update there?
No update. Okay. And that is simply because I have heard nothing since our last meeting.
Okay.
So I don't have anything. Last I heard on the HGMP, though, ODFW, Elise, and company were waiting on some data for genetic legacy effects.
Okay.
Cam, do you have any update on whether or not we've received those?
I think it's in process.
Okay.
I've been seeing an awful lot of Mark at the lab, which is unusual. He's getting closure on all the analyses. I couldn't tell you what the timeline is.
Okay.
So I think the next step was for the Corps, NIMS, ODFW to meet maybe sometime after the first year and kind of talk about next steps with HGMP. Does that seem consistent with where you're at?
Yeah, that works for us. Yeah, we were kind of in a holding pattern until the rest of that data came through, because Bruce did share a copy of the HGMP.
Okay.
But with the caveat that, you know, it's missing this piece of information, so.
Right. So I don't know if you can answer this, but is the Corps willing and able to engage in working on that collectively, given the litigation?
I think so.
Okay.
My direction has been to keep pursuing developing an HGMP for Summer Steelhead collaboratively with ODFW and NIMS. So until I hear otherwise, still proceed down that path.
Cool.
Great.
Okay. I probably won't. I don't know who is going to facilitate that group or that team or whatever, but maybe I'll suggest at least suggest a few dates. I know she said she's tied up, as I suspect won't start until after the holidays.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe sometime in January, though.
Okay.
Cool. All right. That's all I've got.
That's all I got.
Anybody on the phone have anything else they need to share?
No, we're good here.
Cool. All right, thank you guys. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Cam, where are you going off to?
I'm going to be stationed in Newport with the Marine Resources Program, supervising fish and wildlife biologists for our commercial finfish monitoring project. So, Rockford, Macon, Cabazon, Hagfish. I'm very much looking forward to hagfish.
What the interesting heck is going creature.
On? Nice.
I can't believe what we catch in hagfish. That's really, really. Anyway.
need to do sampling? Regular frequent sampling?
Not regular. Most of them sitting there. Well, we do exactly what you do. Driving up and down the coast. It's a 4.5 hour drive one way from Newport to Brookings. I have to be there every 2 months. So Brookings, Coos Bay, Newport, Garibaldi, Astoria.
Up and down. Probably playing those two, you know, every other, I guess some of that's out of control. But
yeah.
There's good times to be in Brookings, I think.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to maybe getting down with some salmon.
Yeah.
The salmon LA?
There's some salmon in there.
Are you having to move it all, or are you still able to move it out?
Well, I got to move it. I'm going to be working in Newport.